Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show, where ordinary heroes tell extraordinary stories during unique and never been heard before conversations with your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Hillary's unique listening and way of asking questions results in conversations that aren't usually talked about, so you can create the life that you really want but are afraid you can't really have. We are demonstrating the greatness in the human spirit in creating a world where we all reclaim our birthright of joy, happiness, purpose, and passion. Now, here's your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show. And today I have a very special guest. I have had a sponsor all this time, and Kendra Bostick is the founder and CEO of Kokori, a platform focused on students building connection, community, and belonging. So welcome, Kendra. All right. So now we're going to do something that I usually do before we start, but Kendra thought it'd be cool to do it now. So we're going to each pick a card from the Divine Abundance deck. And Kendra is going to tell me when to stop. And then we'll pick the top card.
Stop.
No? Stop. Okay.
Yep.
This is Kendra's. Ooh. It's called receiving.
Oh.
Every day it becomes easier to receive the highest divine plan and to trust my inner guidance.
That's the work that we're doing right now. That is perfectly aligned.
All right.
with our goals and helping put this vision, this opportunity out there for educators and receiving.
Wow. All right, cool. All right, now my turn. That's cool, right? It's always right. Okay, let's see. Trust. This is exactly what I've been working on. Trust. Allow me, divine, to give you my deepest longings, trusting you to know exactly how to handle them. Wow.
There's a butterfly in that picture as well.
Yes. Going through the cocoon. Yes. So anyway, if anybody's interested in these, I love these cards. They're Divine Abundance. They're Oracle cards by Tosha Silver. And I got them on the Louise Hay site, whatever that is. That's where we got them. Okay, good. All right. So Kendra, you know, she's the founder of this wonderful company. But it's experiential. So she agreed that we would do an experiential exercise that we want you all to do who are listening so that you can get it. It's not something you talk about. You experience it. So do you have one lined up, Kendra?
I have one lined up. I actually got to experience this on Wednesday from my professor who taught this to me. He wrote the book on adventure therapy. So how to use experiential social-emotional learning practices therapeutically. And it is also one of my teammates' favorites. So you are going to put your arms up high in the sky.
I don't want to look at my arms. Wait, should I just put you? I'm going to just have you so I don't have to look at my arms. Here we go.
No, we're doing this together. It's important.
Okay. All right. Well, this is getting real. These are my real arms. Okay. Go ahead. All right. Here again.
Perfect. No, it's over. It was actually just a fun stretch. It's not even the activity. just to get warmed up a little bit. All right. So what I want you to do is cross your arms.
Okay.
And tell me, how does that feel?
It makes me feel separate. Like I'm bracing myself for trouble. Like I don't trust.
It
makes me feel closed.
Okay. All right.
How about you? How does it make you feel?
Yeah, it is it makes me feel like I'm holding myself close. Like I am, closing myself off, protecting myself. I'm guarded.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so now what I want you to do is shake out your arms, and I want you to fold them in the other direction. So if your ha arm was on top, put it underneath and put your other hand on top.
Can't remember what I did before. Okay, I just switched them. Okay.
All right, and then now how does that feel?
Not as closed.
Okay.
For some reason, because it's uncomfortable. So I'm more focused on the awkwardness of it than on blocking out others, you know?
Yeah. So it feels uncomfortable, but now you're a bit more open.
Yeah, isn't that that's weird.
All right. So what we just did was an experiential activity. And the way that we go through life is with our arm, right? With our arms crossed in a comfortable way. So this is our norm. So when we are in any type of an activity, however we typically show up, whether, if we face a challenge, maybe we shut down, maybe we work through it, maybe we ask for help, maybe we, go do something else that helps us feel better that isn't as positive. When we practice experiential social emotional learning activities, we are trying something new. We are trying on a new way of being. And that means that it is uncomfortable. But since we're trying that new thing, just like you just said, pretty perfectly, this was not planned, was that we're a bit more open. We're more focused on what we're doing instead of just going through life in the way that we typically do. So very, very simple exercise that helps you understand the sort of the underlying philosophy behind experiential social emotional learning activities.
Wow. And so I know, in other conversations, you told me about why that, like bringing play, has the kids be able to learn better. I mean, we're starting in the middle here. We'll go back to your story later, but I just want people to understand why it's so powerful. Yeah. Can you explain the thing about the brains, how when the kids are anxious or whatever, they can't learn? Okay.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So there are quite a few different concepts in those questions. So what we do with Kikori is we provide educators with experiential social emotional learning activities. So these are team building games or initiatives where students are going to be faced with some type of a challenge. And the big idea is what we just experienced, that when we experience challenge, we have a very we have our way of dealing with that. When kids do not feel safe and they don't feel connected, their brain's response is to help them get to a place that is safe. And in order to get there, if they don't feel safe and connected, they typically go into two different areas, which is either fighting, arguing, making sure that the saber-tooth tiger stays away from them and fighting it, or running away, avoiding, shutting down, hiding. And so again, there are two pieces there. One is that it's very important for us as educators to help our students feel safe and connected, to build relationships, to build our students' self-confidence, to help them see that they can accomplish hard things. And the other is what type of activities will actually help our students be put into situations where they are open to building those skills. So that's really where the play piece comes in. With all of us, really, with adults, it's actually an excellent way to learn. It's something that I experienced as a school social worker, which is why I'm so invested in this philosophy and in this type of education. But play is fun, play is engaging, and it allows us to dive in without all of the typical defense mechanisms. A lot of the students that have behavioral needs in the classroom, when you bring in play, they love to play. And so you're going to help them overcome those typical barriers by bringing in a playful element.
So let's say I was a kid and I just had a problem with someone, or I couldn't get, had, you know, we were doing a problem and I couldn't get it and I was feeling stupid or whatever. You know, let's say I've got my arms crossed because I hate feeling this way or whatever, and that's all I know to do. You bring in play, which has me like access a different part of the brain, right? Like it gets me out of that stuck mode. And now I become open. Is that how it works?
100%. Yeah. So the other scientific part of the experiential play is that, so through a game, we're really enacting almost, it's called a kinesthetic metaphor. So through the play, we're working through hard things, but it's not through a math problem. It's not through reading. It's not through the things that are typically happening in our lives. So when we face a challenge through our play, we now have, the way that it works is that you actually, so with the metaphor, you bypass your conscious resistance. And so you're actually accessing like a different part of your brain when you're focused in this metaphor, where all of the typical things that you would do because it's fun and you want to win and you want to achieve the challenge, you're open to trying new things and trying out new behaviors. And and when the teacher is working together with you in this, when you're all in this challenge together, then you're open to trying new things and creating a strategy in ways that aren't happening in, you know, in math class every day.
Wow. No, I mean, I can see it for me. You know, if I get mad or if I get frustrated or if somebody says something and I take something the wrong way, I'm going to be like this, you know, and I'm not going to be really able to be productive or work or learn because I'm just mad, right? But if you now, let's say, switch, hop over that part of the brain into play.
Yeah.
I'll probably just forget about it. And I can already feel it releasing. As if that really happened. I mean, I was just making it up and I was already stressed out. But you know what I mean? Like, I can feel it releasing and being able, willing to be cooperative. Whereas I wouldn't have when I had my arms crossed, you know, mad.
Yeah.
So
well,
interesting.
The super important piece of this is that there is an experiential learning cycle that happens in the play. So actually, If students are just playing, there are wonderful benefits. There's joy, there's oxytocin, there's dopamine, there are fun experiences that kids have, but it's actually layering on reflection. So as you're playing an activity where there is a challenge, where those feelings of frustration or those stories that you tell yourself come up, the idea is that we pause and we say, what did you notice? So how are we doing? Great, not so great. A lot of times in challenge, the first time that we try to challenge it, we're not doing so great. So we're giving kids an anchor. They're like, ugh, you know, we're not figuring it out right now. Why not? What happened? And that's where you start to build the self-awareness. You learn the stories. You learn your reactions. So, well, when Sarah said that to me, I took it personally, and then I didn't want to play anymore. And so it's that first part is reflect. What happened? Okay. Are there any other times this happens? Oh, actually, abstract conceptualization. When people say things to me in these different circumstances, I often take it that way. That is a reaction I often have. And so now you're starting to learn patterns. This is what just happens in this game. Oh, wow. That happens in other places too. Now, what can we do differently? And we're all in this together. The only way we're successful is if we all come up with if we all solve it together. So we're all motivated to work together. Well, I can ask you what you meant by that. I can tell you how it felt when I heard something. We can agree to put all the ideas out there without any judgment for our first round. So there are all different things that you can do. And by coming up with that strategy and those ideas, now you're crossing your arms the other way. You're trying something different. You're changing from that static, constant behavior to try something new. And watch, when you do this, you have success. So the whole goal of the activities and the goal of the facilitator is to create an opportunity of success. And now that becomes a part of your limbic system layered into your world is that, wait, I had an experience where someone said something to me and I didn't take it personally, or I asked them a question, or we created a process of we're all going to name ideas and no one is going to judge them that will work in other situations. And that is the deep understanding or reasoning why this experiential approach, how the play helps kids become invested and engaged, and how the reflection helps them build self-awareness and new tools and new experiences that they can do things that they didn't know they could.
And then it helps them connect and grow.
And through challenge, exactly. Yep. So the experiential learning cycle is a play, and then reflect what happened during this activity, connect. How does what happened connect with other times when this happens? So when there's competition, how do we react? Like, oh, wait, well, there was competition here. I shut down. I got frustrated, or I started taking over. And then the grow is, what did we learn? So how did we solve the problem? Y'all did it. How did you do it? And holding on to that. And you can take that grow and use it to, so that's where the transfer can happen. We did this in this activity. Now, how can we not take things personally at recess, or, you know, at the cafeteria, in different places? And that's the full cycle behind the experiential social emotional learning theory.
Wow. So, and all ages can do this. What?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. So the way that I got involved in this was when I was getting my master's in social work, I attended a conference called the Association for Experiential Education. I was trained by some of the best facilitators in the world, in my opinion. Some were professors at the University of Michigan, where I was taking my, where I was getting my MSW. And for me as an educator, every year I went back to this conference. I started finding the workshops that were happening locally. And that was how I learned actually tons about myself, who I am, why I am, and the activities that I brought into the schools and learning spaces that I worked in. So through Kikori, we build this experiential social emotional learning into our training. It's a really important part of the initial training, the quarterly celebrations, everything that we do involves play and reflection, and helping people create these metaphors to learn about themselves. And then, of course, yeah, it's amazing for K-12 university. We see K to 99, pre-K to 99.
So when you're talking about trainings, what do you mean the trainings?
We work together with schools, and when we work together with schools, we aren't just handing a box of curriculum. We are really using these activities to help educators experience what these activities are, how they create community connections, belonging amongst the staff themselves, and then they're able to use the activities in a much more meaningful way with their students.
Okay, so you're actually training the educators that are going to use it with the students. Cool.
Yep, exactly. Yep. And so it's that similar, it's that holistic goal. There are a lot of programs where teachers are kind of just given a thing and expected to use it and understand it. And when it's not relevant, when it's not meaningful, when it's not like integrated, it just doesn't have the same effect for the educators or the students.
Cool. Now, would you say that your competitors, I know there's a couple out there, are they the same experiential approach?
Yeah, so there are a couple other companies, and I just want to say as well that I do believe there's value in all of the programs that are doing this work. I think that there are different ways to reach students, and that it's all valuable and helpful. There are a couple programs that are more focused on the team building experiential approach, but many of them do more of a traditional top down.
So what would that lead, what would the top down not have that you have?
Yeah,
Things.
so the big difference is whether we are telling students or facilitating their learning and empowering them to take ownership and to have agency in their learning. And right now we're talking about, the social emotional learning wellness component of education, but I think the experiential approach can occur anywhere. So it's also, occurs a lot within academics itself, the difference between telling kids versus allowing them to discover and play and learn.
So it's like telling them how to ride a bike versus actually having them ride the bike.
It's giving kids a worksheet where they label the parts versus getting on a bike and experiencing it and figuring out how it works and how to make it go faster and slower, but expecting the same success in both scenarios.
Wow. Big difference. Okay. All right. Cool. Now, all right. Can we go back? So we did. That was, I hope you all experienced that. I did. So let's start at the beginning. What inspired you to create Kikori?
Yeah. So, when I look back, it's interesting, like all of my different life experiences have all been, markers on this. We call it our entrepreneur, this journey to where I am today. I am not someone who, I never took a business course and studied technology. So the fact that I am now running an ed tech company, really has to do with the importance of this work and all of the people that have been a part of my journey. So let's see how far back.
Well,
the
when did you, I guess the question would be, when did you decide to go into social work, right? That's what you did. Is that what you studied undergrad?
yeah, so I studied I got my MSW after I spent 2 years abroad after undergrad.
And what was your
Studied
undergrad in? What was that degree in?
psychology.
It was, okay.
And I still remember, so when I was studying psychology, there was one course, cognitive behavioral therapy, that was my entry point to there are things you can do to help people. Up until that point, for anyone that studied psychology, there are a lot of stories, fascinating stories, but not as many. How can we help? What can we actually do to help the folks in these stories to get better, to have the lives that they want?
And what did the cognitive behavioral therapy like teach? Like, what was that moment like, or what was, how does that work? Like, as opposed to just the story?
Sure.
Can you?
So cognitive behavioral therapy teaches that basically there are different entry points into changing our behaviors. So the cognitive piece is identifying the thoughts that you're having and testing the thought. So is that a realistic thought? Is that a true thought? And focusing on creating more positive thoughts that are more true to who you want to be, who you are. That's one of the things that drives our feelings. A big piece of this is actually not even in the CBT, is the sensory motor. So that is understanding what's happening in the body, what triggers fight or flight, what happens during fight or flight. So all of the chemical mechanisms, the adrenaline, the cortisol, the reactions that are created, understanding that when you don't feel safe, that you're, that there are all these chain reactions. You actually, your eyes physically, your pupils physically dilate, and you see people around you as dangerous. There's so many messages in this that when educators understand that and they see their students' reactions, they can easily label fight, flight, fight, flight, and understand that it's not a student, purposely being, I don't know, negative or purposely trying to argue. It is an automatic reaction. And it's really based on, the a lot of it can be helped with the environment that you create when you create, when you set up and put in place the conditions for a happy, healthy, safe, connected classroom. The other piece is is the behavior. So starting to being able to study, what are my behaviors? What do I do when difficult things happen? Because then you can choose different behaviors and learning coping strategies. That's a big part of the cognitive behavioral therapy model, is when I notice I'm getting upset, I can take 3 deep breaths, and actually practicing the deep breaths, meditation, yoga, exercise, knowing when to sleep. So those are all parts of the CBT therapy.
So I just have to ask this. One of my friends is a teacher, and I remember her talking about, you know, kids that were just, they had bad behavior. You know, they were bad. They were labeled as bad.
Yeah.
Would this, like, are some kids, I always wondered, are some kids just bad, or are they in that fight or flight and no one knows that? So they keep, you know, boom, 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 you know, they're trying what they're trying, but they're not getting into, you know what I mean? What you were just talking about. What's your opinion on that?
Yeah. Not only are they, trying what they're trying, but the world around them is reinforcing the story. So it is a constant negative cycle where they think they're bad. They do something bad. The people around them tell them they're bad, and it continues to get worse and worse and worse. And all of those different pieces I just mentioned. So the thoughts, the behavior, the sensory motor reaction. So not only are they like hypervigilant because they think that everyone around them doesn't like them, but then the people around them are actively unhappy with them, which makes them more hypervigilant. Mm. Like, so it's a negative, a negative cycle.
And can you break it? I mean, it seems like the Kokori stuff would be able to break that cycle, the bad behavior, quote unquote.
So I think the experiential approach is one of the most powerful for the students that are typically in that category or seen in that way, or an MTSS tier 2, tier 3 students. The work that my professor did in adventure therapy, those are the students that are never successful in school. A lot of times that's the last resort. And for a lot of those kids, doing adventure therapy is the only thing that does work. But that's removing them even from schools, and bringing in a wilderness, removing the phones, removing a lot of those pieces so they can recreate, who they are, get in touch with who they actually are on the inside. But yeah, I think that's a great point just to bring up, because so many of us see kids in this way, and it's just education. It's just understanding the automatic responses, and in noticing it in ourselves first. That's always the first step.
Oh.
You know, we all experience fight or flight. We all get frustrated. We all, lash out when we are feeling attacked, when we feel like we don't have control. We all shut down if we feel like there's no answer. But understanding the science behind it is paramount is a first step. And so that's why the trauma-informed practice is so important. And just being able to see what's happening in a way that's objective and compassionate. And then the experiential team-building activities are extremely powerful in teaming up with our students and facilitating them fixing their own behavior. So this is at the end of the year, I'm talking with the schools that I'm working together with, and they're using the Kikori calendar, the daily calendar of activities and morning meeting and closing circle. So every day kids are getting to connect with one another, and the ultimate goal and opportunity in this work is that through these activities, your students can tell you how they are going to fix their behavior.
Wow.
And that's the difference between telling them every day over and over, I need you to sit down. I need you to be quiet. I need you to listen and plan an activity where the goal of the activity is that we all, you know, pass the ball to each other, but the only person that talks is the person who's holding the ball and watching as your students come up with a way for them to pay attention, watch, take turns, and be successful and really like learn and practice and come up with their own strategy for those things that you're asking for every day and create ownership over that.
Wow. And that happens. And that happens.
And that happens. And that's, yep. And that is, and there's learning that's required. So I think one of the things that is very popular today in Western society in the United States is our hacks, our efficiency, our faster, our, you know, bite size. And the reality is that hacks, as far as I've seen, hacks do not help our students learn that they are capable, create authentic relationships, you know, learn how to care about school, about the world around them.
What's a hack? Am I supposed to know that?
So hacks are everywhere these days. It must not be in your algorithm.
No, it's not in my algorithm.
Yeah, so right now with time and technology, to be honest, we're looking at how can we do things faster, quicker, more efficient. And the reality is that, you know, how can we just press play on a video? How can we, you know, help our kids and have a robot help our kids instead of us doing it? How can we? And I think that there's always some truth to that. But when we pull out the humans, when we disregard the value of human connection, and that co-regulation and that we are in this together, it's not lasting.
Right. Wow. All right. So many questions.
So in order to do the experience, so that's the one thing with the experiential approach is it does take a bit of training. It's not a hack. Yeah. It takes a bit of training. It takes a bit of investment. And with that investment, there are incredible outcomes and happiness and joy for the educator and the students.
Has social-emotional learning become just one more thing on your teachers' plates? Do teachers and students both find it boring and ineffective? Then bring Kikori to your school. Kikori transforms classrooms through experiential SEL activities that help students play, reflect, connect, and grow. Even better, students say it's more fun than recess. Schedule a no-obligation conversation at kikoriapp.com/bringkikori. KIKORI.
Hey, it's Hillary from Getting Real with Hillary. I want to share something really powerful with you today. Jerry Dale was deep in the music industry, providing girls, drug, and gambling opportunities, all while justifying it as making a living for his family. He questioned his path, but then God turned his life completely around. Now Jerry's on a mission to redeem and help others find their way back from the dark side. Jerry's book, Music, Porn, and Jesus, A Journey to Redemption, is his raw, real-life memoir of how God rescued him from the music industry, the porn world, and his own rebellion. It's not just a story. It's a testimony of grace, hope, and freedom. Visit IamJerryDale.com to get your copy and join a movement of redemption. If God can do it for Jerry, he can do it for you too. Hey, it's Hillary from the Getting Real with Hillary show. Life can be messy, raw, and real. And sometimes we're afraid to feel vulnerable. We're afraid to be that real self. Well, that's exactly what the Getting Real with Hillary show and Getting Real movement is all about. Being our true selves. Every week, I bring you stories of transformation, authenticity, and hope. People getting real with their struggles, their faith, and their breakthroughs. So don't miss a thing. Subscribe to my weekly newsletter today. You'll get stories, links to everything new, and how to create a life you love every week directly to your inbox. You can also find my books on Amazon, my courageous and riveting memoir, The Second Piece of French Toast, in case you feel stuck in your life and want to get inspired. How I came out about my no sex life and my marriage, in my second book, Real Talk. That one will get you speaking up in ways you've been too afraid to do so, and really creating amazing freedom. And my third book, How to Stop Fixing Yourself and Start Having Fun, the name is called Your Bullshit is Your Blessing. Find links to everything and subscribe to my YouTube channel, Getting Real with Hillary, and you'll find the links in the header. So visit, and you can also visit gettingrealwithhillary.com, because the real you is worth it and wants to come out. Going to bring back our sponsor, Kendra Bostick. Well, we're already talking about Kikori, so maybe we don't need to say more. Now, okay, I have a question. I have had the last two shows that premiered were people who were diagnosed with one, a young man who's doing TED Talks and speaking. He is autistic and he owns his autism, and he was teaching me how to interact with people with that, the signs. It was very interesting. And then another woman, you know, she had been diagnosed with bipolar, autistic, OCD, and she's, you know, again, both of them are about not being their labels, and they're accomplishing so much, and they're not stuck being in what people might think, you know, someone with autism is limited. So anyway, can this be valuable for people who have those kind of? Yes.
Oh, yeah. 100%. So these activities are incredibly valuable for all students. They are, so for students who are stuck or who are exhibiting, you know, experiencing or practicing behaviors that lead them to not be successful, that is the core goal of the experiential team building activity, is helping them practice new behaviors. When educators know how to lead the behavior or lead the activities, they're also able to start like playing in different ways, where the students who haven't been a leader get to have a chance to do that, get to have a chance to experience that. Students who are on the spectrum are able to practice social skills, working together, collaborating, making eye contact. Within Kikori, there are many activities, such as greetings, morning meetings, sharing activities that are super valuable just for those core social skills. So making eye contact, greeting one another, connecting with all the kids in class, getting out of your cliques. But the other piece that I think is so important is there are many behavioral specialists, wonderful folks that are working with students that have been, you know, diagnosed with autism or other behavioral health disorders. And the reality is that we are all in a classroom together. We are all in a community together. We are all in this world together. And that only focusing on the students that are presenting with these needs isn't going to help our community be happy and healthy. So when we work together with a classroom, helping all the students recognize we are in this together, and we all have our own strengths, what are they, is really flipping that mental health model, if that makes sense, into a community building model.
It seems like it's like brings equality to the group, that everybody is an equal member, that people aren't special or good and some aren't bad. You know what I mean? That it would just make them all equal parts of the community,
which is real.
Well, Very different. Yeah.
And isn't that our goal? Like when we get into the community, don't we want everyone to contribute? Don't we? Wouldn't our society be better if everyone felt wonderful about themselves? If they knew what their strengths were and leaned into those instead of feeling bad that they aren't good enough or they can't do what they do. So I think I use the word opportunity a lot, but I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I don't know why, but we naturally look at what we're not good at. And I think anything that points to our strengths, where kids can see that, you know, they might not be able to do this, but they have this strength, is really valuable. I don't know where else they could do that.
Yeah. Really? Well, and I think one of the other things that I point out a lot is that we are not a society of mathers and readers. We are gardeners. We are artists. We are, dancers. We are, right? There are so many different incredible, important. We are cooks. We are roles and places in life that kids could really thrive in. And so how do we help them find that and help them find their passion and help them see that they can do things? That's, I think, the core. I know that you've had Margot Denemy on previously, one of our partners in this work. We're creating a digital literacy curriculum, and she's gotten to see the other end of that as a criminal justice attorney. What happens when our students don't believe they can, what ends up happening throughout their lives and where they end up. So that's one of the big pieces of this. But yeah, it's not just about these kids. It's about all the kids practicing empathy, seeing each other, learning about each other. And being happy and excited to do that.
Mm. Now, we had discussed that the teachers and the parents, so we can obviously see the value for the kids. Why did the teachers and parents love it too?
Yeah, so the experiential approach is not new. The way that we are trying to bring it to teachers using technology is innovative in our field. But people have known about this method. Paulo Freire is one of our founders that taught people. So he was a Brazilian and he led people he taught about two different education models, the banking model of education, where you're depositing information, which means that whoever is in power and has the most money gets to decide what that information is, versus the problem posing model of education, where you are asking. And just by asking people, again, you're showing people they can, you're inviting them to solve problems, and you're giving them the experience of success and ownership over their own lives and agency. Kurt Hahn is another great example. John Dewey, of the folks who have been doing this for ages and teaching how creating community helps our students thrive. And so it's not a new concept. It's very powerful. It is taught virtually everywhere you hear about the experiential model, but it's not easy. And so that is the piece that we at Kikori have really been focused on, is taking this concept, these team building activities, and organizing them into a calendar where every single day we're providing educators with activities. We align them with a different fun national day. So we're bringing in the world around us. This is not don't be a bully in a vacuum. We are bringing in stories. We're bringing in STEM, nature, you know, when it comes to bullying, there's International Anti-Bullying Day, which is the story of a boy who wore a pink shirt to school, was made fun of, and two other boys bought pink shirts for everyone in the school to say it doesn't matter what you wear. And now half of the world wears a pink shirt on this day to say we can wear whatever we want and we support each other. So that's the joyful piece that is built into the calendar every single day. We also follow the responsive classrooms framework. So that is a morning message, The sharing, that's really your traditional classroom activity, a circle time where all students are able to share their ideas, their thinking. Those students who throughout the day, you know, as soon as it's math class, they're like, oh, their brains turn off. Reading class, like, oh, well, I'm not going to have anything to add in. Every single morning, just in the first part, the morning message and the sharing, every student is turning their brains on. They're thinking, they're connecting, they're sharing, and they're being validated. And it's fun. Then we add in a greeting where kids are, again, mixing, making eye contact, practicing social skills, getting their energy up. And then there's an activity as well, that team building activity that's built into every day. We also have a closing circle. So we're really bookending the days, the beginning and the end, with connection, welcoming, reflection, joy, and they're all available on beautiful slides created by the amazing creator and designer, Haley Burns. And we have...
My daughter. They are beautiful, right? They really are.
They're so fun. They're so engaging. So we've got a pre-KK, 1, 2, 3, 5, and then advisory. So they are developmentally appropriate. Every week, we build in a CASEL, Collaborative Academic Social Emotional Learning, learning intention, and we organize every month with a self-awareness, self-management, social awareness, relationship building theme. So we are layering in all of the social emotional learning that educators and administrators are requesting in the standards. We're making it fun, and we make it super easy for teachers to lead. So that's the difference between, the dreams and goals of doing this work and actually helping teachers bring it to fruition in their classrooms with just like no planning required at all.
So the teachers love it because it's
teachers
easy.
Love it because it's easy, because their kids have fun, and because it's helping them. Helping their students build the skills that they need to be successful throughout the rest of the day through these activities.
Wow. But it sounds like it also is a way of helping society. By creating kids who are happy and joyful and understand their strengths and part of the community and seeing how to get out of that fight or flight, you know, or the fear thing. How can that not help society, right? Yeah. The more, the merrier, right? I think it would change the world if everybody was using this. Honestly, I'm not just saying that. I really mean it.
My mom has mentioned a couple times over the past couple of years how wonderful it would be if we could work together with the folks in the Oval Office. If we could just bring a little Kikori into Congress, if we could do a couple team building activities and help people, respect each other's differences, respect each other, care about each other, learn about each other.
Well, creating a win-win instead of a win-lose, that would make also the world work. Instead of fighting down who's right, we would be lifting up to creating solutions that work for everyone.
Yeah, well, right? That's so one of our partners that we've been with since the very beginning is called Play for Peace. So Play for Peace uses cooperative play in communities in conflict all around the world. They train young teens and young adults in how to facilitate these activities, and they lead peace sessions with children to, you know, create laughter and really cross those divides. And so they are the folks that have really helped bring in that cooperative model and the difference between competition and cooperation. And once you learn it, it's, again, it's just education. You can use time. So instead of having teams work against each other, the class is working together to beat their time, to beat the clock. And there's really powerful ways to build in collaboration instead of competition. But even if there is competition, building in ways for students to say it's okay, you know, and talk about that, talk about how it's okay to lose, and the only way that we're going to get anywhere is if we make mistakes. So it's all built in, and I agree that we can make a big difference the more that we help our students connect and with one another.
Yeah. Wow. So, okay. So how, in the last few minutes, we have about six, how do people find you? How can they, you know, get Kikori?
Absolutely. Yeah. So KikoriApp.com is a place where you can go. And we have a couple of different Kikoris available for anybody, whether you are just beginning, whether you are a pro, whether you are a school, organization, district. We have our mission is to democratize this type of education. We see experiential learning happening so much more in high income learning spaces, whether it's inquiry-based, reflection, project-based. And our mission is to bring this type of education that empowers every student to recognize their voice, to have agency, to build empathy everywhere. So there is a free beginner membership that's available in Kikori. With that, every single week, we provide a free morning meeting, advisory. That's the entire day that's available to educators, as well as activities in every category that are free. And we have different, our partners will come in. So we do collaborate with amazing experiential leaders in the field. So sometimes they will come in and sponsor a month of their playlist or their curriculum that's available. Then we have an individual membership. So it's $99 a year. It's super, super affordable. I know that a lot of teachers and schools also give teachers a small a budget that they can use to apply towards that. We are launching a program that's part of our social mission with everything happening today, where for every premium purchased, we will be gifting a premium membership to educators that are in need. And there's also a school program. So our schools, we have been working together with the Lower Yukon School District, for example, in our 4-week summer program. They doubled their attendance, increased engagement, joy, said it was the best summer that they had had. So that is all available on our website in our case study. But we are working together with schools across the country in New York City, in Ohio, in Minnesota, in Jersey, in Florida. And they are, yeah, absolutely loving using Kikori every single day. When we work together with schools, we do provide that level of professional development. So we include launch trainings, celebrations, monthly coaching for the administrative level, and we support SEL champions as well.
And then what about the little piece, I think, because I'm a parent, that the parents loved. Can you want to just say that real quick?
Absolutely. Yeah. So we're also offering parent workshops. Parents are some of the most important folks that are parents, family, guardians, family members, guardians, caregivers are some of the most important people in our school community. And so we do offer parent workshops as well, where we train the parents on the experiential practices. Their big questions are often, how do I get my kids to talk with me? That morning meeting that's available for free, parents can log in so they are able to access that. And so that's really closing the loop where kids can play in school. They can come home and lead it with their families. And we also have parent add-ons. So we've had parents that after the training, they've said, we love this. Can we do this with our students? And so that is all available for any schools that we're working together with. So if you are have a PTA or PTO, we'd love to come in and meet with you and share with you about the trauma-informed practices, help you understand a bit more around what's happening with your children in regards to fight or flight, as well as how these team building activities work.
Wow. All right. Woo. So in our last minute, what would you like to say? What? Go ahead.
Just again, wanted to make sure that folks know that about the really exciting curriculum that we are building with Margot Denemy on weaving together SEL and digital literacy. So this is being launched in the fall. There is a sign up now for educators that are interested in bringing this into their school. And it is focused on helping students understand what is their digital footprint, and some of the harms, and really understanding what's happening as far as the mental health, physical health, and just the different components in the online world to help our students be safe.
Right. And they can all, they can find all of that at KikoriApp.com.
Yep, KikoriApp.com. It's all available there. And there's a place where you can find what's available for schools, as well as the new curriculum that's available.
Okay, great. All right. Any last words?
I think that the words that we started off with, that receiving, and trust, I feel like those are the two like guiding elements in my life right now, that there are so many people that have done this work for hundreds of years that are a part of the Kikori platform. And my hope in creating this, you know, this platform and this space is that we're all able to work together, that they are able to, that, you know, receive a bit as well. And that really that we're all able to receive, whether it's administrators, educators, students, family members, and the folks that do this work, and trust that when we lean in and we do the right thing, that it'll all work out.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Kendra. Thanks for being here. Thanks for the work you do.
I appreciate you so much, Hillary.
Thanks. You make the world a better place. Bye, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you for watching this episode. I started getting real with Hillary when I discovered that I was a people-pleasing, pleasant phony, and wanted to be more of my real self. We can grow together. If you will like the show, subscribe to my channel, and share this episode with your friends and family so that we can have a world that's more real.